Portions of this program may be pre-recorded.
Welcome to the How to Kill an Hour, the half-hour edition brought to you by Southside Medical Center, where your health is their primary care. And now, without further ado, here's your host for the next 30 minutes, the one, the only, the Ed Man.
Yeah, welcome once again to the How to Kill an Hour radio show. I'm your host, the man with a plan, the Ed Man, here to give you some of the news for the past week. What I'm going to do is a hop, skip, and a jump over to venerable Yahoo News, as usual, because they've got the best news, right? I remember when Trump was in office, and every day they would have four or five stories on the front page talking about how bad Trump was. Let's see what they've got nowadays. First story. Biden's plan to break hold cars have over U.S. Cars have a hold over the U.S., but not for much longer, thanks to Joe Biden. Brute X invasion coming, and it's going to get loud. I don't even know what Brute X is. What is Brute X? Brute X is cicadas, those bugs. Okay. DMX in grave condition after overdose report. Oh, that's, you know, that is an important story. I hope DMX is okay. Vets find unsettling cause of bear's friendly behavior. All right. Norton landed breakout role after DiCaprio passed. Yeah. I've always wondered, how did Norton become so big? And I guess that story is going to explain it. Edward Norton, the actor, not the character from The Honeymooners, the actor. Ken Burns, people making lots of money off Big Lie. I wonder what that Big Lie is. People are making lots of money off the Big Lie of U.S. election fraud. So even though Trump's not in office, we can still trash talk things. Documentary filmmaker Ken Burns, known for expansive movies on quintessential American subjects like jazz and baseball, said in a new interview that former President Donald Trump and his allies have damaged the country by promoting the big lie of widespread election fraud. And worse yet, they've made money off of it. Yeah, the big lie of widespread election fraud, not the state Senate hearings where you can watch people testify with an affidavit about the fraud that has actually taken place. So, you know, don't worry about making your own decision. This guy is going to tell us that there has been no widespread election fraud and the election was perfect. Maybe he can write a story about how much money Rachel Maddow's show has come in for promoting the Russia collusion for 3 years or 4 years or however long they kept that garbage up. They're still doing that. All right, well, I think I've made my point. You see how different the stories are post-Trump as opposed to when Trump was actually in office. I am going to go back and read that Biden story, though, because I'm interested in the fact that cars have had a hold over America. So let's see what this story says. All right, this comes through Yahoo News by way of the New York Times. America has long favored cars over trains and buses. Can Biden change that? This is by Brad Plummer and Nadia Popovich. Let's see here. If America is dominated by car culture and the call of the open road, there's a big reason for that. Over the past 65 years, the United States has spent nearly $10 trillion in public funds on highways and roads, and just one quarter of that on subways, buses, and passenger rail. Well, I mean, it could be because this is a very open country and it's a lot cheaper and a lot more individually, kind of controlling of one's own destiny, I think, to be able to travel by car. I think people in this country enjoy doing that. Now, I know when you get older, you start to enjoy it less because you can't see as good. But I think that we enjoy traveling by car. But anyway, this is going over the Biden plan for infrastructure. But President Joe Biden's $2 trillion infrastructure plan, $2 trillion, guys, unveiled this week represents one of the most ambitious efforts yet to challenge the centrality of the automobile in American life by proposing to tilt federal spending far more toward public transportation and coax more people out of their cars. Experts say that transformation is necessary to tackle climate change, but could prove extremely difficult in practice. Well, now, just engaging my common sense here, and I cannot prove this one way or the other, but just thinking about what I'm reading right now, if this is being done for climate change, are you going to help the climate by having more vehicles running 24 hours a day, 7 days a week, or by having somebody use their car when they need it? I think that if this country had somehow gone the other way and that we used more public transportation than automobiles, I have a feeling that the liberals would be saying that we need a change to automobiles in order to save the planet, and they would be sending trillions of dollars into getting us to buy cars. I have a feeling they just like to spend money. And I'm being a bit unfair, I think, by calling out just liberals. I mean, all politicians love to spend your money, don't they? But, you know, the excuse of climate change to me sounds a lot like more of a liberal idea. Let's see. But as part of his plan, Biden wants to spend $85 billion over 8 years to help cities modernize and expand their mass transit systems, in effect doubling federal spending on public transportation each year. There's also $80 billion to upgrade and extend intercity rail networks such as Amtrak. It would be one of the largest investments in passenger trains in decades. And while Biden's plan offers $115 billion for roads, the emphasis would be on fixing aging highways and bridges rather than expanding the road network. It's a very common trope that when libertarians try to argue that we should be paying less in taxes and give less power to the federal government, the argument seems a lot of times to boil down to, well, who's going to pay for the roads? You know, I think that communities can pay for their own roads, but according to this, looks like Papa Joe Biden is going to take care of everything for us, huh? Let's see. I'm going back to the article here, and it says that Joe Biden is a big proponent and writer of Amtrak. And that they're going to, here's some more of the plan. In Philadelphia, the Southeastern Pennsylvania Transportation Authority needs federal aid to move forward on a $2 billion plan to extend rail service to King of Prussia, a fast-growing job center, as well as a $1.8 billion plan to modernize the city's aging trolleys, said Andrew Bush, a spokesperson for the agency. Could you imagine that? The spokesperson for the agency is saying that the agency needs federal money, your money, so that they can build stuff to King of Prussia, a fast-growing job center. Hey, I got an idea. Why don't you pay for it yourself? All right. In the Bay Area, federal funding would be necessary to extend the Bay Area Rapid Transit Light Rail System to San Jose, California, and create a regional network of carpooling lanes, said Randy Rentschire. Rentschire, that's actually the name. Director of Legislation and Public Affairs at the region's Metropolitan Transportation Commission. Biden has also proposed spending $80 billion to upgrade and expand intercity rail service, such as Amtrak. Well, we know he likes Amtrak, and now he wants to give them $80 billion. Right now, the busiest Amtrak route is the Northeast Corridor between Washington, D.C. and Boston, which Amtrak says needs $38 billion for upgrades and repairs. Well, unlike Biden, because I'm not a frequent rider of the train cars, in my opinion, the entity that should pay for Amtrak's repairs is Amtrak! And not only that, in addition, Amtrak says that with $25 billion, it could greatly expand its network by 2035, adding 30 routes to cities currently underserved. Yet, attempts to expand U.S. transit and rail systems may run into pitfalls. Building infrastructure in the U.S. has become notoriously expensive. Oh, I wonder why. And difficult compared with other countries. I wonder why that is. You know, every week I tell you that the things that we keep doing here in the United States to make labor more expensive, to make running businesses more expensive, we have a big problem because it's not just ourselves in this world. We're competing with other countries also. And it's a shame that the same politicians who create these problems then need even more of our money to fix the problems that they created. All right, I'm going to switch topics here. Speaking of boondoggles, how's this one? Pentagon could open itself to costly litigation from contractors if U.S. pulls out of Afghanistan this year. So this comes to us through CNN Politics, and this story is by Oren Lieberman. And, you know, you got to love it here. We can't get out of Afghanistan, because if we do, we might get a bunch of lawsuits, and we don't want lawsuits, so we just have to stay in war forever. Otherwise, we're going to get sued. So that's how things have been set up, apparently. And this is hilarious. So earlier, you heard them ask Joe Biden if he was going to fulfill his campaign promise, because he had to match Trump, because Trump was saying he was going to get out of Afghanistan and set a drawdown date for, I think, May. And so they asked Biden if he was going to make that date, and he said, well, it would be problematic. And then they asked him, are we going to still be in Afghanistan by this time next year? And he said, well, he can't see it. So he's saying, we're not going to make the deadline, but we are going to be out of here by next year, is what, you know, the impression that he's giving us, right? Well, according to this, here's the story. Despite the signing of the Doha agreement last February that called for a full drawdown of U.S. troops and personnel from Afghanistan by May 1st, the Department of Defense issued nearly $1 billion in contracts to 17 different companies related to work in Afghanistan past the withdrawal date. There are currently some 18,000 contractors in the country, of which 6,350 are American citizens. I love how CNN is emphasizing that, you know, if we don't send people overseas, you know, for war, then people here might not make as much money as they could. Let's see. With a deadline rapidly approaching and no formal decision from the White House, the future of the contract, some of which have completion dates in 2023 and beyond, remains unclear. But the Pentagon could potentially have to pay hundreds of millions in settlements or face years of litigation if the U.S. pulls out of the country on schedule or by the end of the year, as President Joe Biden suggested is likely. Well, I mean, from my point of view, go on and pay the money. I mean, I would hate to waste our tax dollars. But if we've got to waste tax dollars, I would rather waste it on lawsuits to contractors who'll now, you know, have to put up with us not being in war anymore and getting all these sweetheart agreements than to waste it on the actual war. The contractors can learn to code, or why don't they do something useful that for the American public, right? So instead of just blowing up aspirin factories or whatever they do, why don't they actually make something that American people would want to buy and would pay for? Maybe these contractors could make an honest living by selling products that will increase the level of happiness in society, as opposed to creating bombs. I mean, am I missing something here? Now get this, contracts agreed after withdrawal date was set. So even after they set the withdrawal date, they had no intention of slowing down. They knew, somehow they know that they're going to be able to influence the government to stay in Afghanistan. On March 12th, exactly 50 days before the March May 1st deadline, the Defense Department signed a contract with Textron Systems Corporation for $9.7 million for force protection efforts at Bagram Air Base in Afghanistan, including unmanned aerial systems, intelligence, reconnaissance, and more. The work was expected to be completed by March 2022, long after the stated deadline. One day earlier, the department signed a contract with Salient Federal Services for $24.9 million for information technology infrastructure in Afghanistan. The contract has the same completion date of March 2022. Notably, two fixed firm price security contracts totaling, oh, we got a pop-up from CNN. Two fixed firm price security contracts totaling $68.2 million with Aegis Defense Services, a private security service, have completion dates in 2023 and early 2026, a security service. The company did not respond to a CNN request for comment, I'm sure. In total, there are at least 18 contracts totaling $931 million issued since the Doha Agreement was signed on February 29, 2020. Can you believe that? What a waste of money. The vast majority of the contracts were signed under the Trump administration, which began drawing down the number of troops very quickly following the signing of the Doha Agreement between the administration and the Taliban. Within 1 year, the former administration drew down the level of troops from approximately 13,000 to the current level of 2,500, making clear the intent to leave Afghanistan fully by the May 1st deadline. Three of the contractors contacted by CNN declined to offer any specifics on plans past May 1st. One cited operational security requirements, while another pointed to the different possibilities, saying, quote, there are a lot of potential scenarios, and it would be difficult to know what may or may not happen. I don't think it's difficult. I don't think it's difficult at all. There's a lot of money to be made here, and the contractors will somehow, I don't know how they do it, but I know they do it. They're going to lobby. They're going to bribe. Whatever they do, it's going to happen, and we're still going to be in Afghanistan. You mark my words. But you already know that, don't you? Right? You don't think I'm some kind of like super genius figuring this stuff out. Look, when you've got $1 billion of contracts on the line here, what do you think we're going to do? All right, I am running out of time here to do this show, but there is something that I wanted to share with you guys. Let's see here. Hunter Biden. Hunter Biden. Look, you know, remember when this was back when the campaign was first starting up, I think. News came out that Hunter Biden had a problem with crack cocaine. And I can't remember where he was first caught or whatever, but the story came out that he was addicted to this stuff. And the news stories came out and swore up and down it was a conspiracy theory. Conspiracy theory. Now he's like the poster child, right? Now he's like the Rob Lowe of political people. And he is known now for this. I think he's known for this. Is he? Is he? In the news circles that I travel in, I see so often how much and this guy has done that it's not a question to me. But I guess if you look at mainstream news sources, you would have probably a question about it. You'd be like, where did all this come from, right? So anyway, it used to be a conspiracy that he did drugs. Then during the campaign, it kind of became sort of a sympathetic story, right? That he did these drugs. Now, look, to be clear, I don't care that the guy does drugs. I really, it's his body, it's his business. He can do whatever he wants to. Unlike people that think that drugs should be regulated and stuff like that. I mean, maybe they should be. There's an argument to be made there. But personally, I think if you want to infect your body with whatever, it's your body, it's your time to live. And you do with it what you want. I would, if I had any friends that did that, I would greatly discourage them from doing it. But but it's their choice, okay? So, and even though I think it's wrong that all these people go to jail for the stuff that Hunter Biden has actually done and is admitted to. And I think that that's wrong, that there's no, that they don't, that there aren't equal consequences. I don't think the people that went to jail should be in jail. So to defend Hunter a little bit, may I call you Hunter? So to defend Hunter Biden a little bit, I don't think he should be in jail for that, probably for a lot of the other things that he's done, a lot of the other things he's done, if you've seen some of the things that were on that computer. But I don't think he should go to jail for that. I think that for the crack, I don't think that the people who have gone to jail should be in jail for doing that. So I don't care about the drugs. But what I do care about is the BS, the lies and the cover up that have come out as a result of this. So in the beginning, it was a conspiracy. Then we knew it was a fact, but everyone claimed he didn't do it anymore. As a matter of fact, if you remember, Donald Trump, when he brought up one of his sons, oh, that's what happened. Joe Biden, Donald Trump was talking about how one of his sons did something. And then Joe Biden said, my son Hunter is a stand-up kid. He was on drugs and he came off of it. And he's like an example of how, you know, people can kick a habit or whatever. And Trump was like, I'm not talking about Hunter. I don't know about Hunter. And that, like, took away from the whole little story that he was going to tell. But Hunter Biden has written a book. And in that book, he says how his habit threatened his father's campaign. So I don't know the timing of all of it, but I suspect that he was still on drugs during this campaign when his dad was saying that he wasn't. And I think his dad knew that he was, because Hunter Biden said that the family staged an intervention. But now that this book has come out, maybe these news organizations will stop pretending that Hunter Biden doesn't have any problems. In fact, he appeared on CBS, and here's a clip of a question that he was asked by. This is on CBS This Morning's, I think, own Twitter feed. Here's the audio. This is hilarious. So this reporter is asking Hunter Biden if that infamous laptop that they found was actually his, and here's his answer.
Was that your laptop?
For real, I don't know.
I know, but you know that's... This
I
is
really a... don't know what okay. the answer is.
That's you don't know yes or no if the laptop
I don't have
was
any
yours.
Idea. I have no idea.
So could have been yours.
Of course, certainly. There could be a laptop out there that was stolen from me. There could be that I was hacked. It could be that there was the... that it was Russian intelligence. It could be that it was stolen from me.
And it could be that Hunter Biden is full of it. And that's probably the most likely answer. You know, you ought to watch the clip for yourself. It is hilarious to see Hunter Biden trying not to blink. He is just looking right, trying to look as earnest as possible and failing miserably. You can tell he's lying. The reporter knows he's lying. He knows he's lying. He knows you know he's lying. But the charade continues, doesn't it? It really is pathetic to watch the struggling here. And in his book, oh man, this guy is just sick through and through. The things that he has done, from sleeping with his, you know, dead brother's wife, to that is the tip of the iceberg when it comes to Hunter Biden. And again, I don't care what the guy does in his personal time, but what I can't stand is how the press would cover for this guy. And what's starting to annoy me even more than that is how Joe Biden supporters pretend that this isn't happening. One of the remarks under that Twitter is Z, you know, snoring, sleeping, right? Like nothing's happening. The first comment under that Twitter thing is, not interested in the fake BS repubs used to smear the Bidens. Pass on this. These guys have got their heads so deep in the sand, and that's a tragedy for the country, because it means that they're just going to keep letting Biden get away with everything and anything. And it's terrible for the liberals, too, because like I've been saying, Biden is everything that they're against, but they sold out.